Okay, good morning again, everyone. Back on the record, Friday, December 8, 2023. This is the matter of the appeal of the critical area buffer reduction, notice of administrative decision number 22-02629. When we took a break, the applicant's attorney, Ms. Liao, was about to commence redirect of Mr. Heacock. So here we go.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Heacock. Like to start by asking you about the CABR decision and notification of the CABR decision. I believe at some point you've may have testified that this is, I guess, maybe just ask the question. What type of decision was the CABR decision in terms of the land use typologies
Oh,
for land use processing?
sure. Yeah, it's a type one decision.
Okay. And the process for in the code for processing type one decisions, I'm just going to share my screen. I'm going to pull that up quickly. So this is 21. 0.04.110 here.
That's right.
So, okay, great. So, a notice, so for a type one decision, a notice of application is required unless exempt by section 21.04.210D. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so, and that exemption by, except for, so unless exempt by section 21.04.210, section D. I'm going to just click that and go there. So, did I get that right? Or excuse me, did I say it was E or D? Oh, my apologies. Let me go back.
D.
E.
Oh, yeah, there you
D.
go.
Okay. Now I'm a little confused. I apologize because I thought we were going to E, so give me just a moment. Let me stop sharing for just a moment. Let me start somewhere else. I apologize. I'd like to ask you about Exhibit F29.
F29, okay.
Yeah, and I'll share it with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this was included in the foundational exhibits, and this I believe looks to be an email communication from you to the appellants in this case. Do you recall sending this email?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Do you recall communicating to and this email, this I believe this was sent before the date of the appeal that was filed in this case. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I believe that if we scroll down, there were some questions from Ms. Ryan regarding the request for variance for critical area buffer reduction. A number of questions that she had proposed to you at the time. And so this is your response to her with regards to some of those questions. And in this first paragraph here, let's see, Can you just review that and summarize what you communicated her with regards to the notice of application and comment period process?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, essentially, I just let her know there was not a comment period that would typically occur in a notice of application, and that since this is a type one administerial permit, there is no notice of application provided. So essentially, that there is an appeal period within the procedure, but that's essentially it. And I think I had attempted to answer all their questions that were provided.
Okay. And the next in the next paragraph, I believe you answer at least one of those questions, and that's with regards to the figure five that has been shown that was within your decision. And the reference to the date of that figure versus the date of the report you relied on. Can you just refresh yourself with that and summarize what you explained to the appellants before they filed this appeal?
Yeah, and it says here the reference to figure five is tied to the specific arbor buffer averaging plan. And then that was dated September 26th, 2022. I think that also the well that's essentially what we had used, in the review. What's it say? The site plan was used as reference to the staff report. Is figure four from that report is what is called exhibit three in the staff report. Staff report often references figures within the associated report. We discussed both figure four and figure five within the analysis. And I apologize for the confusion. We reference the site plan on page five of the CABR.
So you provided some response on clarifying for the appellants before they filed their appeal that you were relying on a September 26, 2022 report, even though the figure that was included might have been from an earlier dated report. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to turn now. I apologize. I'm going to go back to the code. Generally speaking, do you know what the code requires in terms of what's included in a notice of decision?
Oh,
Content
typically,
wise, yeah.
yeah. So typically, in a notice of decision, there is a there's a notification that's provided, and then a 3-day review period for that notice itself. It's an administrative notice, and then the actual decision that is posted at that point.
Okay. And in terms of the content for that notice of decision, this is 21.04.260. It describes the content for the notice of decision, what it needs to include. This is section four here. Can you just read what's included there in terms of what needed to be included in that notice of decision?
Yeah, and it says in item four, a statement that the complete case file, including findings, conclusions, and any conditions of approval, is available for review and shall list the place, days, and times when the case file is available, and the name and telephone number of the department representative to contact above contact about reviewing the file.
Got it. So generally speaking, when you issue a notice of decision, the contents of that decision are required to say that the case file is available, but do you know if you're required to actually specify all the contents of that file in the notice of decision?
I don't believe so. I don't think you have to state all of the files you review.
And generally, are those case files made available to parties following a notice of decision upon request?
Absolutely. Yep.
Do you happen to know whether or not the case file was made available to the appellants?
I assumed so. I mean, they had asked, and we provided that to the DCD admin section, and I believe that they were provided the information.
All right, very good.
Hang on just a sec. I'm sorry.
Sure.
Sorry, what puppy was eating a cushion?
Very good. I'm going to share my screen again. I'm going to go to the KBIR staff report for the KBIR decision.
Okay.
Uh-huh. This is page 11. I just want to refresh all our memories. So this is the documents consulted in this analysis. So this at least is what you listed in your index of exhibits in your decision. Uh-huh. And sure. That included the wetland buffer mitigation plan and site plan dated September 7th, 2022. I'm assuming those are from ELS.
Yeah.
And you also reference here in 4 and 5, the South Bridge plan and habitat crossings and the North Bridge plan and aerial view dated April 3rd, 2023. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So, and you know, this is a much shorter list than what was included in the foundational exhibits. Does this include all of the documents that you had reviewed leading up to your issuance of the KBIR decision?
Well, the individual bridge permits also had documents as part of that. So, you know, each one of those bridge permits and, you know, the habitat management plan as part of that, it is... You know, we're referencing that these bridge permits had, you know, a separate permit number, and that we referenced and everything to do about those specific permits as well. That was the whole reason why, when we had originally returned the critical area buffer reduction permit, that we had asked for, you know, revisions to documents and things like that. So
this number here is referring to those separate bridge permit files.
Separate bridge permits. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go down to page 16. So this is a section of your report, excuse me, it's page number 16, where you're describing the various activities in the buffer as part of this KBIR decision.
Uh-huh.
The top of this here, it's numbered page 16. You did include a discussion in your decision about temporary buffer impacts to both the sewer line corridor as well as the permanent buffer impacts to the sewer line corridor. That we were looking at earlier. Okay. Thank you. So this was analyzed and discussed in your KBIR decision.
Yes.
When you were asked about this earlier, had you maybe just forgotten that this was included in your decision when you were asked about this on day one?
I'd say obviously.
Okay. In terms of the, I'm going to go to that. Actually, I'm going to stay right here. So the second sentence, can you just read this second sentence? You're all highlighted here about at least temporary impacts.
Yeah. The sewer line corridor in the western buffer of wetland L2 will follow the existing logging road path to the existing culvert and follow it for a short distance before curving to the south.
So that sewer line corridor, is that under an existing disturbed area, existing logging road?
Yes.
That's being proposed?
Okay. Correct.
And I think we heard some testimony maybe by Ms. Bartlett about being on site to walk the path to figure out where that road location was to
yes.
Try to align that utility line with
that's
that
right.
Road. So for purposes of a temporary impact, you know, is what does the county look at the existence of that? It's already disturbed, right, with the logging road. So to the extent that there'll be temporary disturbance from the utility work, permanently, yes, that utility line will be there, but will that existing road's already there disturbing the buffer, is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's already...
Is that why you consider that a temporary disturbance? Because to some, there's already improvements within the buffer in that alignment.
Certainly for that portion. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And as you said, the county looks at utilities differently in buffers. Is that from other types of improvements?
Yes.
And effectively allows those.
Yep.
Okay. Give me just a moment. Did you, I know we had, I just showed an email with, from Ms. Ryan to you, one of the appellants. Did you have any other communications with Mr. Lubisher before you filed?
I think maybe a phone conversation as well. I think he had a follow-up conversation as well. At that point, I think he said, "Oh, we're planning on appealing." In that phone conversation.
Okay. Did he ask you questions about the scope of activities or anything regarding the appeal? Any questions regarding the appeal itself at that time?
I don't recall. I don't know.
Okay. I'm gonna go to the second minor modification. Here, this is the minor amendment that was issued just a couple of months before the critical area buffer reduction.
Oh, sure.
This is the section in that minor modification decision concerning wildlife corridors.
Uh-huh.
And if I recall, and let me know if this is consistent with your recollection as well, is that there is a discussion here about these North and South bridge crossings with regards to some minor adjustments that would be be made as a part of these additional approvals.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's some depictions of it there, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Are you aware of whether Mr. Lubisher was a party of record for this minor modification decision?
I believe so.
Yeah, I can sign that. So if he was a party of record, presumably he would have received, I'm just going to do a search. He would have received record of this decision before issuance of the CABR, is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. All right. And then, and I believe we saw previously with Mr. Smith that there were these conditions of approval. Let's see if I can find it from memory. I apologize. That the buffer averaging reductions, and this is condition number 17.
Condition 20.
Yeah, that buffer averaging reductions in wetland fill are being processed with the under CABR permit and condition permit file 22-02629. Is that correct?
Yes.
So this was issued a few months before the CABR.
Yes.
Yeah. And if the party had requested information regarding that file prior to issuance of the decision, would they have been entitled to review those materials?
Absolutely.
Stop sharing. Just as Mr. Telegin had asked you some questions regarding fill and a buffer and whether or not that's a permanent impact, at least to the extent you've concluded that those were temporary impacts, is that correct?
Yes.
And under the code, I believe you said that temporary impacts are allowed in buffers. And there's requirements to restore and mitigate for any of those impacts, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. If ground, because fill and rating and fill is ground disturbing activities, is that correct? And you those can be characterized as temporary if the site's mitigated and restored. Am I tracking the logic here in terms of what you've been testifying to?
Yes.
So if that wasn't considered a temporary impact, What else would be considered a temporary impact in buffers? What other types of activities, I guess? Do you have any idea?
Utility, for instance.
Okay, utility, like a permanent utility or a utility line.
We would require restoration.
Yeah, no, I guess I'm just trying to understand, and maybe you are too, if grading and fill, that's, you know, where there's restoration of that site back to the conditions that are typically required for the buffer, within a vegetated buffer, what would be considered a temporary impact if those aren't considered temporary impacts? Because I guess I'm a little confused about that myself. Do you have any idea?
No.
Okay. Give me a moment. I'd like to ask you, there were some questions that were posed to you with regards to the road that's specifically between phases 5 and 6. I'm going to pull up the originarial plat decision. Oh, excuse me. Hold on. I'm going to share the right screen here. I think this is it. I'm going to go to condition 37. First of all, I guess, are you familiar at all with the reasons that I think have been testified to earlier with regards to why that road needs to be constructed, at least as a temporary gravel road?
Well, as I understand the temporary gravel road situation, the fire district needs access throughout the site. The fire marshal with Kitsap County Department of Community Development also typically has comments in relation to the number of homes that are allowed for that kind of purpose, and to make sure that we have access for life safety, you know, access for, you know, fire apparatus or that type of thing in the event of an emergency, so that there is alternate access points. So that's the nuts and bolts of that.
So your understanding is that the road between, I know the phasing numbers have changed from the original plat to the current plat, but
yes,
what is the current 4, 5, and 6? So, you know, kind of 6, which I believe breaks between Taylor Morrison owns one portion of it to the north, and Pulte owns
the south end.
Yeah. So that connection between the two, that is in part required for emergency access. In fact, that was a condition of the preliminary plat. And as you described, I think there's a certain number of homes that at some point you get too many homes, and that's what triggers the need for this emergency access. Yep. Right.
That's right. Okay. That's right.
Do you have any, are you aware at all of the progress of the Pulte south portion of the project? Just in terms of,
I couldn't tell you offhand.
Okay. I guess, are you aware that they have started developing a little bit ahead of Taylor Morrison, that they've had some other permit approvals already issued?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yep. So they've already started constructing, and at some point in time, once they hit a certain, let me go to this next condition. Give me just a minute. I think it might be here. I'm going to go to condition 51. Yeah, so this condition 51, I don't know if this is somewhat similar to what you were describing. Is that here? I'll just ask you to read this, these two sentences here, just so that we can familiarize ourselves.
Sure. Okay. Spine Road A would be constructed as a part of phase 1 development and would be rough graded for utilities placement during phase 1. Proposed Spine Road A would extend south from the proposed Division 1 through the subject property to an entry and exit access point on South Kingston Road Northeast.
Okay, thank you. And I apologize, I probably, and And the sentence before that discusses, I apologize.
Yeah, and it states the applicant would provide access to proposed residential dwelling units within Division 1 through Spine Road A, which would extend west from South Kingston Road northeast.
Okay, and so this construction of this road during the various phasing of the development of this project, that was anticipated in the original preliminary plat decision, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm just going to scroll up here. Stop sharing for just a moment. So with respect to that road, it, as you said, it needs to be built to accommodate a certain number of homes at some point in time. That's a requirement of the plat to provide emergency access. As we've been discussing, I know you're not aware necessarily of where Pulte's at this stage of the project, but they've started constructing. They've had some site development permits already issued. I think we were just moving that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
We might have even heard that they've even finalized portions of, like, they've gone to final plat on at least portions of this. So they're under development, right?
Yes.
And they're a separate company developing it. It's all part of the same plat, right?
Sure.
So in that, there's been some hypothetical about maybe that road will never get built. You know, the phase four, not phase five, SDAPs to Taylor Morrison will get issued, but maybe that phase six never will get issued, and maybe that gravel road will stay in that condition forever. Would Taylor Morrison be able to keep that road in that travel condition forever, based on these conditions of the preliminary plat that you need to have this emergency access road?
I think to
provide that secondary access. I think that's what it's intended for, right? Emergency and secondary access to the other, to north end of the site, right? So, you know, maybe Taylor Morrison folds and they can't finish their project, but Pulte, they would need to still finish construction of that road, because they still need that access. It's required of the plat, at least to have that secondary access. Is that correct?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Or some other access.
Or some other access. Yeah. Yeah. But at least that's what's approved in the plat, is to have that secondary access.
Correct.
Right. Okay. And so it's possible that if Taylor Morrison folded, because Pulte still needs to have that secondary access, that they could come in and finish that road because they need it, even though it's not necessarily part of their obligations now, that they might need to do that in order for them to even continue constructing their portion of the south, right?
I would assume so. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Do you know if bonds are typically required by the county for completion of roads?
Yes, bonds are required. Yeah.
Okay. So there could be bonding involved and requiring to ensure that even if Taylor Morrison or Pulte didn't complete the road, that there would be a bond in place in order to ensure that. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Give me just a moment here. Apologize, I closed something I needed. Okay. You provided some testimony. Again, you were asked some questions regarding the stormwater plan. That you were in connection with the CABR in Unit. I think I asked you some questions. I just want to refresh your commentary on that. That for purposes of reviewing the stormwater plans, did you rely on Cecilia Olson's input and review for purposes of processing the CABR, at least at the 60% drawings?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I believe Mr. Tullison was asking you some questions about the condition of the road and the drainage. And at the time he was asking those questions, he was showing you a figure shown on Ms. Bartlett's wetland mitigation report, right? And so he's asking you questions in regards to her depiction, which is really more of a wetland mitigation.
Yeah, right.
Right? Sure. That sure. You, so at least in terms of evaluating any stormwater impacts or grading and fill impacts. The county, they'd look at the civil engineering plans, not necessarily Ms. Bartlett's report for evaluating those potential impacts. Is that okay? And is it typical that you would rely for purposes of potential adverse impacts to wetlands occurring from a water quality or water quantity perspective? Would you rely on Cecilia Olson or any of the other civil reviewers on staff, or would you do that analysis yourself in general?
Well, I would rely on staff, but I would also, I have familiarity certainly with stormwater systems too, and you know, realizing it's a 60% design, would rely on the stormwater reviewer. But you know, I looked at that as well, that it looked like that drainage, and the swale itself was going to go into and feed the wetland, which looked beneficial for the wetland, certainly.
Sure. That's right. Question for you on the buffers. There was some questions that Mr. Teligent asked you with regards to disturbance to buffers, in particular wetland P2 and the distance where permanent versus temporary impacts are being proposed. Did you hear the testimony of Mr. Wright and Ms. Bartlett regarding the intent of the 200-foot buffer around wetland P2?
Yes.
So if we recall, that was, again, when it was rated as the mosaic category 2 wetland, standard buffer is 100 feet. The additional 100 feet, they provided testimony that was intended for, I believe, is it habitat protection?
Well, it wasn't, I don't think it was rated as a mosaic. I mean, I don't know specifically in relation to that, but
At least the 200 feet. Yeah, just sorry, habitat, I apologize. Yes. I'm really asking about the intent of that additional 100 feet that's added to the standard buffer for category 2 wetland. So again, just assuming
it's definitely, definitely based on the wetland category and the reason that we typically ask for, and this is in the rating system as well. It discusses habitat. Habitat and of course water quality as well, but you know, those components are reviewed in the associated methodology that's vested to that 2004 rating system by Department of Ecology. So it is consistent with typically those outer portions of wetland buffers are additionally for habitat.
Okay. So I think we heard some testimony from Mr. Wright that in terms of water quality related impacts, that the first 100 feet or even less of that is where water quality benefits are typically observed. Would you agree with that?
Observation? Yes, and that's consistent with, again, the rating system. Yeah.
Okay. And then Mr. Wright also provided some testimony that the intent of the critical area ordinance is to protect adverse impacts to wetlands, not to protect adverse impacts to buffers. Would you agree with that intent from the county's perspective?
Yeah, that's consistent with, again, with what's vested here before us, you know, the 2005, critical area ordinance. Things are a little bit different now.
Okay. And then last question for you, this going all the way back to your earlier testimony where you were asked some questions, I should say, on the relationship between or the wetland P2 and the logging road that generally people have, nobody's disputed that there is some sort of historic logging road as to when it occurred, who knows, but at least with respect to that logging road that bisects wetland P2 and L1, L2, is that correct?
Yes.
When you've got two wetlands that are bisected by human-made features and there's no surface water connection, and assuming it's not a wetland mosaic, would there be any reason under the county's critical area regulations that you consider that one wetland? And under, like, as of, you know, in terms of like evaluating proposed impacts today, would you consider, was there any reason to consider that one wetland?
There's no reason to consider it one wetland.
Okay. No further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Liao. Now, I guess, recross by Mr. Telegin.
Thank you. So Mr. Heacock, Ms. Liao asked you some questions about the purpose and function, or the sort of the purpose of a buffer, right?
Uh-huh.
And their theory is that it's the first 100 feet that sort of protects all the buffers or all the functions. And then that second 100 feet, I guess that protects something else, just wildlife. I wanted to call your attention to the county code, section 19.150.170. It just says buffer means a non-clearing native vegetation area. Oh, it's a non-clearing native vegetation area, which is intended to protect the functions and values of critical areas. Uh-huh. Where does it demarcate between different parts of a function protecting different parts of functions and values of the wetland?
It doesn't in that.
Okay. And then, you know, assuming that, you know, maybe there was an intent, let's jump down to the buffer averaging rules. Uh-huh. When you're talking about modifying a buffer or averaging it out, whether you average it, reduce it by 1 inch or 100 feet, you have to meet the criteria for buffer averaging, correct?
Well, unless you have something that's previously vested, but
yes. I understand that's your view, is that it was vested, and so that's water under the bridge. Doesn't matter if it violates the CABR rules or the buffer averaging rules. I understand that. But in the abstract, right, assume for me a moment we're asking about a different project. In the general, whether you're modifying a buffer, you're reducing it by 1 inch or 100 feet or 200 feet, whatever it is, you have to meet the requirements of buffer averaging, correct?
The buffer averaging, you know, requirement is would be analyzed at that, whatever we're surmising some other project. Sure.
Yeah. My point is, if you want to reduce the buffer at all, you have to approve that doing so will not adversely impact the wetland, correct?
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it doesn't say not adversely impact the wetland in this way or that way in terms of wildlife or water quality. It's just a blanket requirement.
Uh-huh.
No adverse impacts to the wetland, correct?
Uh-huh. Yep. That's what it says.
Fair enough. And in this case, would you agree with me that when you're issuing a, looking at a project with multiple phases, each phase of that project that's going to reduce the buffer has to meet that requirement? Each phase has to have no adverse impact on the wetland?
Well, in the pre-assumption that we're talking about Project W, that doesn't occur, we would, I mean, that's what buffer averaging, it's a component of buffer averaging.
Well, I guess let's talk about this project. Every phase of this project has to meet this requirement, right? No adverse impact on the buffer.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, again, we have components of vesting here. Keep in mind that there are situations.
I understand you want to prove that point. I'm not talking about it. I understand that it's vested. You don't have to consider the impacts. You don't have to consider it because you think it was all approved in 2009. I'm not talking about the vesting issue. I'm just talking about the rule and how it operates. Right? The rule says no adverse impacts. Each phase of the project has to result in no adverse impacts to the extent they're using buffer
edge. Part of the, it is part of the code.
Correct. Let's see here. Miss Liao asked you about, let's see here. What is a temporary impact? And her question to you was, well, if putting a permanent fill compacted 10 to 12 feet thick, but it's revegetated, if that's not a temporary impact, then what could be? Right? What else would qualify? Well, I draw your attention to this document. This is our Exhibit A6. This is the Army Corps of Engineers User's Guide for Nationwide Permits in Washington State.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, if I jump down to page 13, I can't do that. Here we go. Oh, sorry. Wrong page. If I jump down to page 25, condition 13, talks about removal of temporary fills.
Uh-huh.
And it says temporary fills must be removed in their entirety and the affected areas returned to pre-construction elevations. The affected areas must be revegetated as appropriate. Now, I get it. This is not part of the Kitsap County Code, right? But it is part of a regular system that applies to lots of developers doing lots of things in wetlands. And it appears to talk about temporary fills. Are you familiar with any construction processes that would involve temporary fills?
This code references direct wetland impacts.
Oh, I get it. I get that. I get that. I understand that. But Ms. Liao's question was, she couldn't understand what the term temporary could refer to if it doesn't refer to permanent fill covered up with new vegetation. I'm just trying to prove the point.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to prove the point. I understand this talks about.
If you'd let me answer, there's no point in relation to what you're suggesting here. This is related to temporary impacts directly to wetlands. That's the Army Corps requirement.
I understand that, sir. My question isn't about that.
I don't know why it's brought up. I guess I don't understand.
I brought it up because she asked the question and you didn't have an answer. You didn't have an answer, and I understood it to be, well, if permanent fill with new vegetation is not a temporary impact, then what could be a temporary impact? I'm just pointing out that there are such things as temporary fills, correct?
Temporary fills in wetlands. We're not looking at this.
There cannot be temporary fills other places?
Not without a nationwide permit or some other, specific permit with Army Corps about direct wetland impacts. So if you fill a wetland, you go through this review procedure.
Fair enough. I'm just asking about construction techniques. And so are there construction techniques, for example, that involve temporary fill material?
Not directly in a wetland, no.
I'm not asking that. Are there construction techniques that involve temporary fill material, even in a non-wetland area?
Oh, in a non-wetland area?
That's my point. So there are such things as temporary fills. Other potential temporary things, would temporarily staging construction equipment be a potential temporary impact to a bumper?
For temporary construction?
Yes, staging.
Staging or what have you? Yep, potentially. Yeah, sure.
Okay, so there are other things that the word temporary could refer to other than permanent fill.
Sure.
Fair enough. It was a long walk to a simple point. I apologize.
Okay. I don't know why we're looking at the Army Corps manual for wetland fill.
We're not. I would ask that this exhibit be admitted for that point.
I think that's what the document is. So.
That's true. I would ask that this be admitted for that purpose.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I jumped ahead. Ms. Liao or Mr. Getches, any objections to admitting this exhibit, A6?
I'm a little confused. I think Mr. Telgen was making the point about what could potentially be a temporary fill And he gave some examples of you know, other types of activities. I'm still confused. I guess I'm objecting. I'm not sure that I'm just not sure what the relevance of bringing the nationwide permit manual for the purposes that Mr. Heacock described, which references, it says removal of temporary fills. I am not sure why this is being admitted as an exhibit. I don't see its relevance. It's a regulatory document. And if all he was trying to do was to try to give an anecdote about what could serve as a temporary fill, I don't think this does it.
Well,
I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
I don't need to respond. I think the point is simple enough. I was showing that there are things that are temporary fills, which I thought was in dispute. But in any event, I'd like to have this document in the record for that point.
Okay. I will admit it. I also have questions as to its relevance, but again, I'm going to be weighing that when I make my decision. This to me seems to speak to fill of a wetland and not to a buffer. But again, I mean, that will be weighed in my decision. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Thank you. So Mr. Heacock, on the utility road, you said there's a road there right now?
Yes, and much of it. Yep.
Yeah. Is that road being actively maintained?
Yes.
It is being actively maintained.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I've walked it about 5 times, so probably more.
Okay.
It's definitely a gravel surface road.
Gravel surface. Okay. And I guess let's see here. Where's the... I want to go back to exhibit F29. This was your email exchange with I think it was Miss Ryan. That's why I'm looking at your. This was a.
I think Mr.
Could have been Mr. Lubisher too.
I think they were CC'd. Yeah.
Yeah. So it looks like he had questions about the image in your report from one ELS report, and then you were trying to explain to him what it really came from. And you said that it came from an ELS report dated September 22nd, 2022.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with an ELS report with that date?
Yeah. Yes.
Is it in the record?
I believe so.
Because the only one I'm aware of is dated September 7th, right here.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. September 7th. So yeah. I'm not faulting you, sir, but so he had questions about what does your report mean? You told him, well, I got it from this other report and there is no report with that date, correct?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I could have got the date wrong.
So you can see how people can be confused about what you wrote.
Sure, I can see confusion.
Yeah. And do you know if the habitat management plan was ever given to Mr. Lubisher or Mr. Ryan prior to the appeal?
I don't know. I am not sure.
Mr. Getch has asked you, you rely on experts, correct? I mean, you're not going out doing all these studies yourself. You know, they give them to you.
I am not the applicant's biologist.
Right. But aren't you kind of like an issue spotter? I mean, don't you review them and say, maybe you should do more work here, maybe you should do more work there, kind of like you did by asking Ms. Bartlett to go out and re-rate wetland P2?
Oh, that can occur. Uh-huh.
I mean, you view these things with a critical eye, I guess what I'm getting at.
Sure.
Yeah. As you should, right? I mean, you're the canon reviewer. You want to look at them with a critical eye. You mm-hmm. want to make sure the law is complied with, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Right. So, by the way, why didn't you ask Ms. Bartlett to go redelineate wetland P2?
That's not my responsibility to redelineate wetland P2.
Not you do it. Why didn't you ask Ms. Bartlett to do it?
I didn't ask her to.
I know you didn't. But I'm saying you did ask her to go out there re-rate it. Why didn't you ask her to redelineate it?
Oh, well, that's part of what a review would entail, would be that if boundaries have changed or things like that, you would adjust the boundaries and recalculate, you know, those boundaries, certainly.
I see. So when you suggested to Ms. Bartlett that she should go out and reevaluate wetland P2, uh-huh. you were suggesting as the county's reviewer that she go out there and both do a new wetland rating and to do a new wetland delineation.
Well, part of part of re-rating would be to look to see if things are as they had been previously stated and analyzed, you know, with flags and ribbons. And, you know, what they do is go through and do GPS locating and things like that. So they would walk the wetland line with a GPS unit to, you know, to reestablish the line, if you will. Yeah.
Right. And part of what they do is they go out there and see if the boundaries have changed.
Yeah.
Because the difference, right, is the rating tells you kind of like what kind of wetland you have. A delineation tells you what the boundaries are.
Essentially.
Right. Very good. Mr. Getchis asked you some questions about Mr. Moody's testimony. Do you recall if Mr. Moody said that his testimony related to surface water or groundwater?
I think he was talking about the surface water. Oh, sorry, the contributing basin.
Mm. Do you remember if he had a focus, whether it was subsurface flow or surface flow?
I think it was more so surface flow.
Mm-hmm. And do you recall me asking Mr. Moody if he was claiming water quality credits for that ditch?
I don't recall that, no.
You don't recall me asking him that question?
Uh-uh, no.
Very good. Well, thank you, sir. I know it's been a long haul. I have no more questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Telegin. Ms. Liao or Mr. Getchis, any further questions for this witness?
Not for me.
One for me. Mr. Heacock, you, Mr. Telegin just previously brought up for you the critical area regulations on buffer averaging, and he asked pretty focused questions on the applicant needing to demonstrate that there's no adverse impact to the wetland where the buffer is being proposed to be reduced.
Sure.
I think you testified to this earlier, but I want to ask you, adverse impact, do you know if that term is defined under the code, under the critical area regulations?
I am not real sure.
I don't think there is. We can certainly double check with the code and the record, but I don't think that the code defines adverse impact, but I'll certainly let you look if you want to just be sure about that.
I can look in the definitions and it should.
Okay. See if I can find it quickly enough here to save us some time as well. Here, actually, why don't I share my screen? This is, I think, the correct version that's in the record. So this
it's not in the definitions.
Yeah. So adverse impact isn't included in the definition.
No. Here's the
you know. Right. And thank you.
That's not backwards, is it? I'm sorry.
Good. It works. And I you provided some testimony earlier that along similar factual lines about an impact. There could be an impact, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's an adverse impact, depending on changed conditions to a site, that there may be a changed condition or an impact to wetland buffers, but whether or not it's adverse is not necessarily the same. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you know, I'm just gonna leave it there. Thank you.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Mr. Telegin, you look like you might have one more thing to add or question.
Sorry. What does adverse mean?
Well, adverse in relation to, do you want me to look it up?
I don't know. I did. It says harmful, right? not everything has to be defined, right? I mean, we all know what words mean. Adverse means bad. Adverse means harmful, right?
I'd say so.
Yeah. Can you imagine a scenario in which cutting off the water to a wetland is a good thing?
Oh, well, I think the applicant has demonstrated they're providing water.
I know, but I'm just saying. Can you think of a scenario in which cutting off the water to a wetland is a good thing?
The water? I don't know.
Right. Can you think that erosion is good for a wetland?
You mean sedimentation?
No, I'm saying erosion. Erosion.
Erosion.
Yeah. Is erosion good for wetlands?
Well, erosion itself would mean, you know, the act of erosion within the wetland itself, not sedimentation. I think so sedimentation would be more deleterious than the actual erosion. But
sure. So let's take them one by one. Sedimentation, good or bad?
Yeah, sedimentation probably not so good.
Good. Okay, sedimentation bad. Erosion within the wetland, good or bad?
Erosion within the wetland would indicate that you have erosive, you know, water velocities or something like that, you know, so within the wetland. So
good or bad?
Not good.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else for this witness? Yeah.
I do. Sorry. I got to clarify that. So, Mr. Heacock, you were just kind of asked in a vacuum about what's good or what's bad and how that relates to, you know, the sort of common person's understanding of adverse impact, specifically with regards to what we've been talking about here, wetland P2. You know, the if there is a reduction, let's just say there is a reduction in water that's getting to wetland P2 from one direction, but there's still water coming, feeding wetland P2 from other directions, let's say, from the sky, from rainwater, from other directions of groundwater. So if you reduce potentially by some amount, I mean, we heard Mr. Moody talk about, you know, yeah, there's going to be 3% of the water that had been coming down the hillside that's going to be permanently redirected on the spine road away. So, you know, a reduction is, you know, if you just put it in terms of bad or good, you know, you would get, you know, sure, less is quote unquote bad. But in terms, the question here is really about adverse impacts to wetland under the code. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so if you remove some of the water that's getting to wetland P2, but there's still sufficient water reaching P2 in other areas from the sky, from the north, from the south, even from deeper groundwater, that wouldn't necessarily be an adverse impact to wetland if some portion of the water that had been getting there is no longer getting there. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, are we all finished?
Can I ask one more? I'm sorry. Mr. Heacock, have you actually seen an actual analysis of how much water needs to get to that wetland and how much will go there after this project is built?
No, not personally.
Yeah. No further questions.
Okay.
Last question. Sorry.
Oh, I thought we were done. No.
I'm sorry.
No. Absolutely. This is, you know, everybody gets a full fair chance.
Yeah. Is that analysis required by code, Mr. Seahawk, under the vested code, either stormwater regulations or the critical area regulations?
No, it would be part of, you know, Title 12 has this connection with wetland review as well.
Yeah, but at least as far as you're aware, at least in terms of the applicable stormwater regulations, you know, applicable critical area analysis regulations, there isn't a specific quantification of water reaching the wetlands that needs to be evaluated by is that correct? Okay, great.
No, that's not in that iteration of code.
Correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Getches or Mr. Telegin?
Not for me.
No, I'd love to, but no.
Okay, fantastic. Woohoo! All right, it's 12:04. Before we break for lunch, I want to address a couple of things. So, Ms. Liao, will you be calling Ms. Ducker first up after, say, at 1 o'clock, okay? Oh. And Mr. Telegin, I understand that you may be calling rebuttal witnesses.
Yes. So I intend to call Ms. Cook, Mr. Rosin, and Mr. Lubisher. I do know that I was told that I have two time constraints. One, Ms. Cook has to go today because she's out until January 6th after today. And then Mr. Rosin also has some conflicts. So although I don't want to suggest this, I want to be done today. If we go too late, we'll have to see where we're at to see if he needs to come back for some sort of small, just his piece testimony.
Yes. Boy, I agree with it. If there is a way for us to wrap it up. My other comment has to do with the motion that was made. Mr. Telegin, if you could address that motion, I hate to say over your lunch hour. And I haven't looked this up, you know, we've been in this hearing, but my inclination is, you know, the theories of the case to conform to the evidence. I haven't looked at the applicability of that and gotten refreshed on Washington case law on that. But I'm also mindful of due process and everybody's ability to prepare for and address those arguments. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to take maybe 5 minutes after lunch so that both the applicant and the appellant and, of course, the county as well can briefly address that issue when we reconvene. But, you know, I it would be great to get through Ms. Ducker and at least get to the witnesses that have time constraints. So so let's plan on that. Does anybody have any questions for me or issues from, yes, Ms. Liao?
I guess I'm still not prepared to respond substantially to that. I didn't even type it down. So it's not clear to me. I support Mr. Getch's suggestion that this be addressed in post-hearing briefs.
Yeah.
And the record needs to be reopened. If the record needs to be reopened, Samer decides that those are new, those are issues that should be decided, then I think that's the appropriate time to come back. So,
you know, I do tend to agree with that. I'm trying to look at it from the standpoint of something that makes the most sense. I hate to say, no, we're not going to hear it. And then, you know, we're looking at future appeals/new challenges by the appellant. So I'm of the mind to address everything. But, you know, I wasn't prepared. Appellants weren't prepared. The applicant wasn't prepared. So I agree with the inclination to let's have the parties address that in post-hearing briefs. And then a determination can be made based on arguments presented as to whether the record needs to be reopened. With that said, it looks like Mr. Telegin, please feel free to weigh in on this.
I think that's a fine idea. So I'm just wondering, so then what do you want from me after the lunch hour?
Nothing.
Or am I off? Or if I'm off the hook?
Let's keep it simple. Yes, let's get done what we came here to do today and get through these witnesses.
All right.
I so appreciate everybody's time and we'll see you. It's 12:08. If we reconvene at 1 on the dot, does that work?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.